Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Conscious Convos with Mo and Lena. This is episode 4, and today we have a very special guest that is Aparajita. Aparajita is a yoga teacher that lives here in Dubai. She's a person with a lot of wisdom and interesting insights. And in this episode, she shares with us how she got started with yoga and what really is the impact of yoga on our spiritual state. It was very interesting for me to learn about this since I don't know much about yoga. And she kindly explained to us the different types of yoga, the differences between them. We also touched on meditation, spirituality in general, and the role of religion in spirituality, the difference between the two. We talked a little bit about synchronicities, sound healing, and a lot more things. There was really a lot to cover in this episode. I really enjoyed it, and I hope you do as well. So without further ado, let's get to the episode. All right, so we're recording. Good evening, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Conscious Convos. I'm Mohammed, the host, with Lena, my co-host as well. And today we have a very special guest, Aparajita, joining us here in Dubai. Aparajita is a Iyengar yoga teacher that has been in Dubai for over 20 years, 20, 22, 23 years. But I believe you've been teaching yoga for about 14 years, since 2008. And there's a couple of other types of yoga that you know as well that we'll talk about. Aparajita came to Dubai first as a graphic designer and then got into the world of yoga, got certified and became a teacher. And that is actually how I met Aparajita. She teaches my wife, Lena, yoga, and this is how we met. And we thought it would be a great idea to have her on the show. So welcome again, Aparajita. And thank you very much for coming.
Well, it's a pleasure. I'm really excited with this new podcast that you started. So I feel great that you invited me to have a chat.
Awesome. All right. So I'm going to start from the very beginning, and I have to make a disclaimer that I know almost nothing about yoga, and I've never done yoga in my life. So here's a chance for me to ask a lot of beginner type of questions. Okay. But tell us, I mean, how did you get started? How did you get into the world of yoga, first of all?
How did I start? If I really look back and I think about when I was very young, I mean, the first yoga pose that I heard of was actually my father. And it was just like he said, oh, if you do Vajrasana after dinner, it's good for your digestion. Something simple like that. That's my earliest memory of someone mentioning yoga. But other than that, it's not like my, you know, my family practiced yoga or anything like that. And this was when I was quite young. And much later, my brother got very interested in meditation. And so he met very interesting people who used to do a lot of yoga. And there were, you know, a lot of these travelers who would pass through and visit places to practice yoga in Rishikesh or Thailand or different places. So he had this friend called Ashokananda, who was this German guy who traveled to India. And he wrote this book on yoga, and he got this book home. And so I was like, oh, this is a cool book. And this is the first experience of me actually looking at a yoga book with lots of pictures. So that those are the first few memories. And then everything took a kind of dip. I remember my first trip to Nepal, Kathmandu. I was around 23 or something. And I thought, I'd do this trip on my own. I'd just go off and see what happens. And again, these are these little things that come in your way. And I remember meeting this person and they said, oh, they practiced a form of yoga and it is really good. And that's when I actually first heard of the book Light on Yoga. So, and Light on Yoga is written by B.K. Sanger. And so me being quite a bookworm, I immediately went and bought the book from, you know, there's so many bookstores in Kathmandu. So I bought that book. And I remember that was my first copy of Light on Yoga. Little did I know that it would lead me to Iyengar Yoga along the path. So that's like the first few, like, what should I say, glimmers, gateways that kind of led me on to this.
Okay. And then in Dubai, I mean, you came as a graphic designer. So
yes,
how did it become a full-time thing?
Oh, it took a long time to be a full-time thing. But I mean, I came here as a graphic designer. I used to practice Aikido, actually. I think I broke up with a boyfriend. I was really devastated. And I was like, oh, I need to do something else instead of waste my time on men. So I had two choices. I could go in and, you know, learn Aikido, or I could do diving. Somehow diving didn't work and Aikido was the way. And then I practiced Aikido for 2 years and I was pretty bad. And so then I got very like, okay, this is not happening. I need to do something else. And so I stumbled into this Bikram yoga. So your question to about Bikram yoga, that's where it really started. I stumbled into this studio which taught Bikram yoga. And there were two things that got me to practice regularly. One, they had a very regular schedule, which was helpful for my work because I finished, you know, like 6:37, but they always had evening classes like all through the week. So I could obviously join. And they had a really cute instructor. So those two simple, very, you know, kind of silly motivations in a way got me to practice deeply. And then something sort of started getting seeded. I still get goosebumps when I say it. But yeah, that's how it began.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, we mentioned already a couple of types of yoga. There's a Bikram yoga that you mentioned.
Yeah.
And there's another one called Bihar yoga. I don't know Bihar if I'm pronouncing it correctly.
Yeah.
And then there's the one that you're certified, the Iyengar yoga as well. What is the difference between the three exactly?
Well, they're all forms of Hatha yoga. And I suppose if I can start with Bikram, since you mentioned that first. And so Bikram Chaudhary, he actually comes from the same place that I come from, which is Calcutta. And he went to the West and he kind of had a few postures. He had a guru from where he learned certain postures and he kind of packaged them very well. And he sold this idea of a hot yoga and somehow it got on. So it's one of those things which got on. Of course, he's quite controversial and, you know, there's been scandals about him and whatever. But nevertheless, I think he made yoga popular and many people who would have never thought of doing yoga sort of got into yoga because of him. So that's Bikram yoga for you. And it's a group of 26 postures which are basically practiced. There's no variation in the sequence. And yeah, so... But and the unique thing was he did it in a hot room, kind of trying to mimic what it would be like to be in India where it's all hot. So I think that really kind of sold the whatever, the package thing. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Now, again, when I first learned about yoga, I, of course, was looking at it in a very shallow way. I thought it was purely a physical thing. That is, okay, good for stretching and good for the muscles of the body. Of course, later I understood that there's a spiritual component and it's actually something that could help you become more spiritually elevated. How does that work? Why does moving the body in, you know, certain poses, how does that affect a person's spiritual state?
That's a very good question. And well, it is absolutely true that yoga is, it's a spiritual practice. If you look at what the meaning of yoga means connection or to connect. And so the question might be, what does that mean, to connect to what? So the idea is that we have that inherent ability to connect to something deeper, that which is beyond this, you know, the fabrication of these fluctuations of our mind and body, and that deeper source. And what yoga does, it connects you to the source. And that's what yoga is. Now, there is this Ashtanga yoga, which means there are eight limbs of yoga. And the third one is what we all know, which is the asana practice, which is the practice of the physical things, which is most popular. When you say yoga, we say, oh, it's like stretching. I don't need stretching, or I'm too stiff. That's what most people will tell you. But asana, or the work of postures, moving the body, is only a small element. The first thing is actually having an ethical kind of lifestyle, having good habits. So there's yama, niyama, then there is asana, then there is pranayama, which I think also people hear about, like breath work and breathing. And then finally, once the body, or this vehicle of your mind-body system, has been prepared, then you can sit down to meditate. And then when you meditate, then you are able to perhaps get rid of a lot of distractions and tune in deeper and find so-called samadhi, right? Or the state of more concentrated awareness, which can open up you up to higher strains of wisdom or compassion. So yoga, in that sense, when your question of how does it help in moving the body, how does moving the body get you spiritual? For that, I would simply say that the body carries many imprints that we all know. And so when you are stretching, you can also look at it as the whole body is made up of these channels, which you might have heard. It's also thought of in Chinese medicine. So through whatever, the impressions of our lives, our thought patterns, these channels get clogged. And so when you start to just physically move it, they get unclogged. And what I find very interesting is that because physical practice is so nonverbal, it's like you don't have to butt your head against with the ego of the person. It just happens. So strangely, like, you don't want to talk about, oh, you know, you have this way of thinking. There's no need to get into all of that. Just move the body. And for some reason, if a person keeps continuously moving the body and moving into that clearer line of alignment, they just change. Or at least that's been my experience. I felt that through myself. And when I guide other people, I see that happen to other people. So that's why I think the bodily practice is absolutely beautiful.
This actually takes me to the point where I wanted to speak a little bit about your website. I got the chance to get on it, and it's the writing there, the blogging is fantastic.
Thank you.
not only because of the ability to express and articulate yourself so beautifully, but the wisdom is actually very evident and is very touching. And I just want to share a part, if you would allow me, when you were talking about obstacles and the way to light.
Yeah.
And you mentioned a very beautiful statement there. You said, I think it was a translation saying, it's not a matter of steering the potential tendencies into action, but removal of the obstacles, like a farmer irrigating his field. He removes the obstacles and the water flows freely on its own accord.
Yes.
And actually that really got me thinking, because I was wondering about the obstacles and how are they actually removed? What does it take for these obstacles to be removed? And now mentioning the yoga and moving the body as one of the means to do that.
Yeah.
But I wonder if you have anything else to say on that when it comes to obstacles and kind of defeating or removing these obstacles?
Yes, and I would say it's more like borrowed wisdom, because if you read the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, he talks about obstacles that come in the path of practice, meaning, of course, as you said, that inherent qualities, that potentiality is in all of us, but it gets discovered up and we all forget what it really is. And so these obstacles through the perhaps the showing up at the practice starts to erode them. And in many levels, at least that's what I feel. At one level, if a person encounters a difficulty and they still come back, they're building a kind of internal resilience. So that itself is taking away that obstacle of, say, giving up, laziness, or any of that. The other thing is, I find that when we, since the anger yoga practice or any yoga practice, it's like the body has its own, what I cannot explain it, perhaps like a magic vibration. And when it's in that right alignment, it starts to connect to that bigger force. So if through the practice, we can keep leading the body to find that internal line, like I often see in a yoga class, like, you know, the face of a person is different when they start out and when they finish the class, because they've gone through these bodily movements, they've kind of tuned into that awareness. And it's not like somebody scrapes off the dust. It's almost like when you tune into the awareness fixes you, mm-hmm. You know? So that's what I feel. So it's a question of how, I don't know why I feel emotional, but I do.
Okay. And, space for you to express. So.
Yes, and I think it's just that. It's just that how often you're willing to kind of put yourself into that stream, and that stream will wash you out.
This is so nicely put. And it actually, it takes me to like another conversation that I was discussing actually with myself, because I watched this video and someone was talking about the difference between spirituality and religion. And mm-hmm. he mentioned something that really struck me. Growing up with my background, religion was constantly pushed, whether from like the household or the culture, the schooling. And so I found myself slowly kind of moving out of that structure and moving into spirituality. However, what I noticed is, and that was the key word that you mentioned on many occasions, which is the word practice. Yeah. With religion, you have a very well-structured practice and rituals that you do, regardless mm-hmm. whether you understand why. It's very meticulous, very specific timing, very specific way of doing it. And so even if it's just the physical, an empty shell with no meaning, but it's still being done continuously and consistently.
Yeah.
What I found, and I'm only here talking about my own experience. I am not saying this is right or wrong or good or bad, nothing. I'm just basically noticing the difference going through that. With spirituality, although I was able to move more into the core and understanding a lot of things much more in depth, but a part of me is kind of still in a mess of not having a very well-organized structure of practice, you know, meditating or whatever that practice is. It feels like things have almost melted into each other and that structure kind of collapsed. And so this is where I'm personally at, but talking about, you know, removing obstacles and how practice is the key really to kind of enable us to bring that flow back again to life.
You know what's... sorry, go ahead, Aparajita.
No, go ahead. I just agreed.
No, I was just going to say that, first of all, it's very interesting that this wasn't planned, but I read the same exact blog post and the same exact paragraph is what caught my attention about removing the obstacles, because what I learned from there, and it made a lot of sense, that the natural way of a human being is that the energy is flowing. So for example, a child or a baby, when they're still children, they don't have obstacles yet, right? The energy is flowing very naturally. And then these obstacles start to accumulate over time because of our upbringing, social programming, whatever it is. And by removing them, you're back to your childlike state, right? And I also understood now why yoga helps with that, because these obstacles are energy blocks, right? And we know that these energy blocks do like physically exist in the body. So when you, I guess when you move the body in the yoga poses, of course, combined with what you said before, which is yoga as a way of life, not just these poses. So if you're living an unethical life and you do yoga stretching, it's not gonna make any sense, right? But if you live that, you know, way of life that is more, let's say, clean, it'll remove these obstacles, and the energy flow goes back to how it should be. I think we're also lucky that there's several ways of removing these obstacles. For example, I mean, I've never done yoga again, but I do meditate, and it's probably like a different path to reach the same thing, right? So I mean, I know, for example, meditation, I focus on breathing, visualizing certain things. Sometimes focusing or visualizing the obstacle itself, kind of dissipating, you know, all these techniques. Yoga is another way to do it. And I know you do both, right? You're also, you practice meditation as well. Is it something you do separate from the yoga poses, or you combine the two together, or there's like a time for each one? How do you manage the two in life?
Time for each one separately. And I would definitely resonate again with what Lena, you said, that I too went through that a little bit, like this desire to explore many things. And of course, thankfully, because of that, it's like you understand, but I also realized that I need the container of one practice, because it's almost like walking this way, walking that way, walking this way, walking that way, and then you never really walk the path. And so sometimes you just say, okay, they're all going there. It's just that this practice resonates with me, and that's with you, and I just need to focus on this and keep going here. And it's only then I'm going to really dig deep. And when I did make that commitment and shift for Iyengar Yoga, though I love everything else, I'm one of those, I think you must have read how I like have this code of, I have a desire to learn. So that shoots me off sometimes to get a bit dissipated. But the moment I started really focusing on Iyengar Yoga and saying, okay, this is the practice, I realized that it, first of all, it sort of mirrored back to me. It's like, okay, there are times when you actually should have gone deep and you just got distracted and moved off. So knowing that I can't go anywhere else, but I have to keep to the practice, sort of pushed me into some areas which were in the dark. So I practice with my teacher, Azita, who's amazing, twice a week. And I also, luckily, because of COVID, there's many international teachers who have classes on Zoom. So I also practice with them. And I teach. So that's my Iyengar Yoga practice. Apart from that, I, again, thanks to Zoom, I've got in touch with this wonderful Theravada monk who also, I think, as I am good when I have a little bit of a teacher boundary, because I can be a bit free-spirited, and which is good. but I need a little container to make sure I keep doing the stuff. And the day I realized that, you know, I'm going to make it a point, whether I like it or not, to sit down and meditate every morning, whether it's an hour or 30 minutes, doesn't matter. It was a late night last night or I didn't get sleep, I still do it. It started to make a change. So yeah, I have a regular meditation practice and a yoga practice.
Could you tell us a little bit about Iyengar yoga?
Why is it different? Well, Iyengar yoga is again a form of Hatha yoga, but it was, you can look up BKS, Guruji BKS Iyengar. He's amazing. And he basically, I won't be able to summarize his amazing journey. So I would perhaps send you a link which the listeners can listen to, but I can summarize and say that he made yoga relevant to everybody. First of all, things that people can immediately notice about him is that he used a lot of props, but the props were simply because, say, if a person cannot do a certain pose, but he used props so that they could achieve the same, the so-called feeling of the pose, even if physically they were not able to. So that itself, I think, makes a big shift, because often yoga has this image of these bendy, flexible people. And here was this person who says, oh, it doesn't matter. You're like 60, you've got, you know, this problem, that problem, doesn't matter. You can do it. And so he devised these many ways, which was never really used in traditional yoga before. So in that sense, he was a pioneer. He was a very fiery spirited kind of guy, and he would push his students. And there was something dynamic and charismatic about him, because of which people from all over the world, not only in India, came to study with him. And I think, you know, as conditions arise in life, and then that leads to the growth. So there were these teachers when yoga wasn't really popular who came to Pune, studied with them. Then they went back to the States. And whether we like it or not, when the West says it's good, everybody starts to follow it. So that did kind of make Iyengar yoga popular throughout the world. And in fact, now if you look up Iyengar yoga, there are teachers everywhere. I mean, in all countries. And they're very dedicated practitioners. And it all started with this one man in Pune, and because he was brilliant in the way he taught. And thanks to him and thanks to all these teachers, now I learn and others practice. And so that's what I would say is a legacy, or a parampara, as they say in Hindi. Because I would, I might sound like I'm a bit of a sort of traditionalist, but I also feel that there's so many types of yoga, like, you know, this flow yoga and this yoga and that yoga, which is great. But again, I'll bring a connection of what you just said, Lina, a few moments ago. You said what you liked about religion is that there were these rituals, whether you understood them or not, you repeated them, and then somehow it does affect you. Now, I'm sure those rituals still exist and are still practiced, because there is a relevance to it, in a sense that it has been carried across through centuries and they work, even if we don't understand them, even if they got diluted along with, you know, the bureaucracy of humans. But there is something about that, the purity of that, which remains. So in a way, Iyengar yoga also, though he was a bit novel in his approach, he taught what was traditional yoga. He kept to the spirit of it. He was interested in the spiritual growth of people. He wasn't interested in a commercial kind of, he was very hard on his students. He was like, if you don't get it, get out of here. Like, I want you to show up with truth. So that kind of value system from a master or a guru is something I'd associate with, not someone who's like, oh, I looked at Iyengar yoga. I know they do props, but I did this and let me do this. That doesn't work. Like, yeah. I kind of.
Sorry. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, like it's a matter of finding what is it that you resonate with, right? Everyone uses language. And it's actually another blog that you wrote that was very beautifully written as well, when you spoke about finding your dance. And sometimes it's all a matter of, you know, moving. You just need to do something about it. Even if you're out of tune, eventually you will get it and you will find your language and you'll vibrate with it.
Yeah.
Something that I am personally still struggling with, because I think I have this FOMO, you know, like the fear of that I want to learn a little bit of everything and then I end up kind of scattered all over the place.
I've been there, I know.
Maybe you can give me some tips on how to like narrow options.
I say take your time because nobody could convince me. I was terrible. I was like, right at the beginning, I was like, I wanted to do Iyengar yoga. Yeah. And then I went to the Pune Institute and then I looked around. I said, these people are so mean. They're so hard. I don't want to be like this. I want yoga to be free. So you have to make that mistake. You've got to go the whole road. And then after having done all that, I realized, guess what? Not really. No, I want this. So until I got convinced, nothing changed. So take your time.
Very cool. You mentioned something, Aparajita, when you're talking about the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously it's been a couple of years, especially the first year was really tough on people, and especially the lockdown phase, where, you know, people came out of the pandemic either, you know, their mental health was not in the best way, not in the best form after they came out. And there are other people that kind of, I would say probably the minority, that found it as an opportunity to go deeper into themselves, an opportunity to self-reflect, etc. And I know you continued your practice over Zoom, which must have been a shift. But in general, how would you say that phase of the pandemic impacted you? Like, what realizations did you have, any insights you had during that stage, looking back at it now?
Well, I remember it quite clearly. Actually, it was interesting because my partner, he was traveling, and he was supposed to come back, and then the Dubai airport shut down, and there was like, I don't know when this is going to change. So here I was stuck in my apartment on my own with my cat. And I was like, okay, this is it. And he actually came back like 108 or 109 days later, which I look at it as like a mystical number, but that's just me seeing meaning in everything. So anyway, so I spent that whole time just on my own. And which also meant that, and I would say whatever the blessings of life, I mean, I am an introvert, so being alone has never been a problem for me. Being with people is hard, but I've kind of got better at it. And so being alone was not an issue. And what was lovely was that, again, because of the Zoom classes, I suddenly got a chance to, I logged on and I kind of found Lois Strindberg, and she had classes on. And then I found Ajahn Chah, who was the meditation teacher. And suddenly I was like waking up at 2:15 in the morning doing a yoga class. And it was a very intense period of learning for me. So again, I guess goosebumps saying that. So whatever conditions got me into that little cocoon for me to learn intensely, I took great joy and I feel grateful for, because it also opened my eyes to what my values were and what is important to me. Some things I liked about the pandemic, some things I don't, and that's just who I am. And so it kind of made me stand a little more stronger in my truth and be okay with it, even if some people agreed and didn't. If that makes sense.
makes a lot of sense. And I can relate to it too. One of the things that it taught me is how many things we thought, or I thought that I needed in my life, that I realized I could do without. And it's so many things that are just clutter, right? And then you realize that you can be, I mean, you can be happy. And yes, there are phases of boredom. We crave human social connection, no doubt about that. But a large part of what keeps our minds occupied, a lot of it is nonsense, really.
Yeah.
And I realized that when we stayed at home for 5-6 weeks, and you know, I was okay, because also, like you, I'm also an introvert myself, and there I did see a lot of positives, which you know could surprise some people that look at that stage as kind of a dark stage in their lives. And you know, I don't blame them either, but I could see also how it could be a positive thing. Switching to another thing, I just want to make sure that I tell this story, which you're aware of, Aparajit, and I think Lina is too. The synchronicity that happened, that was really interesting when we first decided to have this podcast. The previous day, I had discovered a video on YouTube about breathwork, and it was in particular related to holotropic breathwork, and I had never done that before in my life. And I did that practice through the video, and I felt amazing. I was telling Lina, my wife, about it, and I was, you know, super excited. And then the next day, when you and I were texting, planning this podcast, and I asked you, you know, if you know any other guests that could be interesting to invite, you recommended to me someone that is a holotropic breathing.
Yeah, wow.
The very next
what
day.
What are the chances? Nothing is an accident.
Nothing's an accident. Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, that was like, and you know, if I may just take another minute, because that connects to another story that happened a couple of days ago. So since this story happened, I became really obsessed with synchronicities, and I started to read a lot about synchronicities and why they happen, what do they mean. And I started to talk a lot about synchronicities. So I was taking a walk with Lina, my wife. There's two and Linas, so I have to keep saying.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
we were taking a walk.
Yeah. Oh, sorry,
no.
Because yeah. Like you keep on mentioning Lina, my wife. So just to differentiate here, there are two Linas. There's Lina, the co-host, and then there's Lina, Hamad, two different.
So we were taking a walk, and I was telling her about what I'm learning about synchronicities. Okay. And during the same walk, change the topic. We're talking about an old friend. 20 seconds later, we run into this friend. You know, just walking, facing us. And I look at him and I'm like, just ask her, when did we mention your name? And she's like, 20 seconds ago. Wow. And I look, and I was like, look, it's a synchronicity that we were talking about him and it happened, but also it's a synchronicity happened while we're talking about synchronicity. So it's like a one inside the other. And that felt really strange, but cool. Like, you know, it just really increases your belief in the interconnectedness of everything and the nature of reality, that it is not what we think it is. It's not the material thing we think it is. It's really pure awareness, and it's all something that exists in our consciousness, and everything is connected. So these things don't surprise me anymore, but when they do happen, they're just really nice, like a nice reminder that, oh yeah, it's one of those.
Exactly.
Yeah. So this question is to the both of you, actually. Mm-hmm. Do you think that when this happens, is it because we are able to manifest faster, or is it the other way around, where we actually pick up on some sort of energy that's already out there and then we start looking for it or talking about it? Like, for example, with your friend, is it because part of you kind of sensed he was there around you and then you started the conversation with your wife and then next thing he was there? Or is it the thought that made him appear? Which one do you think it is?
I'll tell you my opinion and then Aparajita can tell you hers. There's no such, on a higher level, there's no such thing as time. So there's nothing that happened before the other. Can't say that my thoughts came before my friend or my friend came because of my thought.
Mm-hmm.
There's only now, there's only a present moment, and everything is connected there. So it's really, you know, time looks linear. It looks like I thought of my friend and then he showed up, but on a higher level, everything is happening at the same time. And I know this is quite abstract, but this
We covered that with Hadil in our previous episode when we mentioned, when we spoke a little bit about time and how it's actually a spiral. Not like a linear. But then I don't know how could it actually be applied on this, right? We talk about the power of attraction and the power of manifestation. And with this, it seems like you kind of need the linear time factor.
Yeah.
And
it's also like a dream, because when in a dream, sometimes you think of something and it appears. But really, like the really, really true answer, I don't know. I'm just guessing here. And my explanation to these things keeps changing over time. The more I learn, the more I realize and understand things on a higher level or on a different level, and then my explanation changes. So if you ask me in another year from now, I might give you a totally different answer. But I don't know, and it's worth thinking about. But I don't know, Aparajita, what's your view on this?
My take on synchronicities. Well, I think synchronicities are kind of like a gentle sort of nudge from the universe saying, hey, you're going on the right track. And it's a bit of humor as well sometimes. So I think it's taking it a bit too seriously to think that we make it happen, because there's really, at the core of it, there's no one concrete you. You're made up of, I don't know, it's a mystery. So the part of us that wants to believe we made it happen is that cute little ego self, which is okay. But the real thing that happened, I feel, again, just like you, I'm just imagining, I have no idea or real knowledge of what could happen. But I can only look at synchronicities which appear in life. And they're just like those signs which tell you, you're on the right track, or like keep going, or maybe you should go this way. And there are those invisible signs which kind of gear us on the right path if we are already tuned in. Now, it doesn't appear to a lot of people simply because it's not that it's not there for them, but they're just so like this, they're not able to see it. But since you are a bit more open, you're able to see it. And since you've been, I think your friend appeared because it was, again, a little gentle reminder saying, hey, keep going, explore that. It's a good subject for you, maybe.
Yeah, I totally agree with also the thought that we're not the ones making it happen, not ourselves.
No.
Ultimately, you know, there's a higher consciousness.
That's true. That's what's happening. You know,
we call it God, other people call it source,
whatever
it is that people are comfortable with calling it. But we have a connection to that source, which is through yoga. You can get connected to it. So we go back to the beginning, but we're always connected to it, whether we feel it or not. Through our soul, right? And at the end, this higher consciousness, this one higher consciousness, is orchestrating all these things, you know, that happened to us. But yeah, it's a very, definitely a very fascinating topic. I have a last question, and then I think it was on your Instagram page, which we will also include in the description of the podcast. And I saw one post about a tuning fork, and I guess that is for sound healing, right? And I don't know, Lena, if you've ever seen those, but it's kind of like a magnetic tuning fork that they, have you ever used it?
The physics in school, do you remember, like in some of the experiments,
yes.
It started there, but I've attended actually some sound baths, and I think it has kind of like the same concept, the vibration yes. of the sound and how it's kind
it's
of aligned.
A, it's a certain vibration, and I remember there was a there was a yoga fest in Dubai a couple of years ago, and there was a booth with some practitioner that had the tuning fork, and I had our daughter Naya, she was 3 years old, and she sat in the chair because she's really curious. She likes to, you know, learn what these things are, and when they put the tuning fork near her forehead and body, she was so calm. And before that, she was like super hyper, and she's, you know, Naya, she's full of energy all the time. And she was like, so calm during the process. And then for the next 30 minutes that we were a little bit concerned in the car driving back home, because she was just like, so relaxed, looking out the window, chilled out. And I'm like, Naya, is everything okay? You're usually a lot more, you know. Then she became, her energy came back, but she was like,
bought so it there and then,
she was very mellow.
You should have bought it there and then, the tuning fork.
I should have bought it.
I had one at home.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I got the website, and they have like classes to teach you how to use it, how to become a practitioner. And I always had it in the back of my head, but I haven't done it yet. But yeah, it's a great thing. But anyway, you posted it, Aparajita. So what was that about? I'm just out of curiosity.
Yeah, well, I posted it. There's this amazing couple, actually. They're called Awakening Prema. And they're in Dubai, but they keep going back and forth. And they do these sound healing courses. Mm. So, of course, I have a crazy love for cats. And so they had this little Instagram post where there was this cat in a tuning fork, and the cat was going purr, purr, purr. And I thought it was really cute, so I just posted it. But it's actually their post. So you can look them up. And Awakening Prema, I'll send it to you. And they do a lot of sound healing and tuning fork and teaching people how to use it as well.
Awesome. So. Maybe we should have them on the podcast.
Oh, I think you would love them. They're really cool. They're really, really nice. They're great.
Awesome.
I think Anna, she also does some Ayurveda, and they're a very interesting couple. You would like them.
Very cool. Very cool. Lena, any final
thoughts? Yeah, we usually ask our guests for any recommendations, reading, basically any thing that influenced you, that you feel like that was a powerful thing that I want to share with people, a book that you read, a website that you've been on.
Oh my God, this is so hard. This is when I fall apart. It's like it's so difficult to find.
Give us three if you can't give one.
Okay, I'll do it more like what's recent or what just pops up blankly in my mind. Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, so I mean, I love listening to Gabor Mate, and I think he's fantastic. So that's one. So any of his books, any of his talks, great stuff. Next, something abstract which not too many people will know about is there are these Thai forest monks, and they have these amazing biographies, and there's a small a YouTube channel where they read the books. They're amazing. I drive around Dubai listening to these stories, so I would send that link. So it's just fascinating listening to the way they went through their spiritual practice, what they encountered, and it's great wisdom. So that's the other one. What else? Oh my goodness. Any of these, Buddhist monks I listen to, simply because I practice that form of meditation. So I would say, any of their Dhamma talks are great.
Okay. If you would be kind to send us the spelling
I will.
Which you just mentioned, whatever info, and we'll post it in the description. And I mean, where can people find you, Aparajita? How would you prefer if people want to get in touch with you to learn yoga or whatever? Is it Instagram, email, website? How do you prefer people get in touch with you?
Well, I mean, they can get in touch with me in any way. I mean, you know, website is there. I'm working on actually revamping it. Of course, stuff will remain, but adding stuff, especially because I realize I have so many lovely students, and you must know that I've asked them all about these questions. So I want to make this area of how yoga touches their lives. So I'm going to do that. And so website's a good place. Instagram, yes. And that's good enough.
Okay. So we'll also post your website and your Instagram account as well. And then whoever would like to get in touch with Aparajita for yoga.
I can also say that I teach at Nilaya House. That's a great studio. So I teach there. So anybody wants to, so you can put Nilaya House as well, because first of all, they're a fantastic yoga studio, also run by a person, Nia, who herself is a Ashtanga yoga practitioner. And so therefore it's run with good good yoga values is what I can say. And so these three places you can get in touch.
Awesome. Okay. Great. Well, Aparajita, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for your time. I think this is the longest episode so far. We've almost hit an hour, but time flew by, and I feel like we only scratched the surface. These things you can always talk about forever, and you can take any of the things we discussed and just go deeper in it for like another hour. So we'd love to have you back on again. Whenever you're free, we'll set it up again for sure.
And great, thank you.
And that's it. Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Aparajita. Lovely and wonderful meeting you.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much to everyone watching. And
thank you.
See you in the next episode.